Hi, and welcome to the Studio Insider Art Podcast. In today's episode, I'm chatting with fellow Australian artist Ange Miller. Ange is a multi impassioned artist currently working on large scale organic acrylic and oil abstracts on canvas. She also teaches masterclasses both online and offline, is a creativity coach, and is passionate about sharing her perspective on the traditional art education system that she taught within for many years. Ange has observed firsthand the blocks that can happen as a result of this kind of education. In her own educational offerings, she's constantly evolving new ways for her students to uncover and work from their own unique creative identity. I really love digging deep into so many topics with Ange throughout this conversation, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, this is Susan Nellicott, and welcome to the Studio Insider Art Podcast. In these episodes, I throw open the doors to my art studio practice and how I run my business as a professional artist. Whether it be candid insider chats with my studio assistants Laura and Steph, or interviews with other creatives, or answering listener questions, there is something here for every emerging artist. I hope my journey can help you feel a bit more at home in your own. Hi, Ange.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me, Suze. This is such a treat.
Such a pleasure to have you on. I feel like it's, you know, we've been connecting for quite a long time via Instagram and lots of messaging lots of resonating with what each other's saying for so many years. So
we were Insta really babies and we've grown up together.
We have. We have. It's really lovely. But no, honestly, I'm just so thrilled to have you on because I feel like there are so many things that are near to my heart around creativity and painting that are near and dear to your heart. So I kind of feel like you're a bit of a soul sister in a way. So absolutely. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Hey, would you like to start off by talking a bit about the kind of art that you make and what your journey to making that kind of art has been like for you?
Okay, so at the moment, and I'm always very careful to say at the moment because I don't like to pin myself to any one thing. I call myself an aesthetic nomad. So I could
be, I love that. Yeah. I'm gonna have to use that.
And next year I could be back to on plein air landscape painting. Who knows? I don't want to pin myself to anything. So, but at the moment I've been working on large-scale abstractions which focus on energy. So rather than anything that is, you know, it's necessarily seen with the eye, there's no sort of representational stuff going on there. It's just movement and energy through texture, sometimes color, but mainly a juxtaposition of contrasting elements. So where I've got, you know, thick rough textures, I'll have nice smooth textures and flowing lines and areas of you know, the opposite, just working all these opposites in together to create a playground for eyes.
Beautiful.
So if
and these are abstract paintings, just to be clear for everyone, which is right. You do a little bit of figurative work, and I know you've done like aerial landscapes and all kinds of things, but the abstract seems to have been playing quite strong for you these past few years, hasn't it?
It does, and I think partly due to the fact that I have so little time. So I can come in and go really far in my adventure on canvas, drawing on all the aesthetic data that I've collected over my 20 years of being an artist, and work it into something that's very therapeutic to make, because I feel like I'm expressing the depths of myself and also just wandering too, getting a chance to adventure and explore and test things together. And have discoveries that really keep me buoyant, so that no matter what's happening in my life, I've got this, it's like a testimony to something working that I can go back to on canvas, which, you know, that's, it just makes such a huge difference. Yeah, so.
I'm over here nodding like a little bobbing toy, because I'm just, everything you're saying just resonates so much for me. I very much, the process I have with painting is very similar. It's soul expression, and it's me at the most essence out in a 2D image, and I feel that with your work too.
Yeah,
which is and probably it's why I love it so much.
For that moment too. So mm-hmm. what you would come the next day, it won't be the same thing. And in that respect, it's like you're sending postcards to your future self from this point in time. This is how I felt. This is the adventure that I wanted to go on, just intuitively. And this is how it all worked out. So I have done a lot of representational art over the years. Like I did a uni degree, Bachelor of Art in Visual Arts, and then went back to teach at the same uni for 10 years. So I did get a lot of practice with still life and portraiture and life drawing and all that kind of thing, which I found really beneficial, although it was... you really have to exert yourself. There's a lot of discipline involved. But I think the payoff is that you get this refined sophistication with your mark making and composition and your ability to navigate a wide open space is kind of informed and bolstered by all this experience that I've had with representational art and with, you know, rendering light falling on landscape. That is such a great nourishing skill to have, to be able to perceive it and then record it in your style, you know, in your own flavor for that moment in time.
I love hearing you speaking about it in that way, because I can see that you've derived a lot of value from your experience, you know, learning representational art and working within an institution.
Mm.
But I also know that you have big feelings about institutional learning around art. It's something that you're very visible about on social media, and you talk about it a lot via your IGTV and your posts. And I love hearing you talk about it, because I feel like you're kind of a fierce defender of those people that are shut down by institutions and schooling. So do you want to talk a little bit about your experience? Because obviously you've had years of experience within working within an art school and then working outside of an art school teaching your own methods. So I'm really interested to hear about your perspective and what you've observed of students in those environments versus what you experience with students in the environment that you've designed and created.
Well, I love this topic so much, because I suffered a lot in my education. I felt completely minimized and everything felt tedious and irrelevant. I would say that I suffered a trauma from my education. So instead of coming out of high school being equipped, ready to figure out my career path, I was more confused than ever. And I just went for my BA in visual arts because I just knew I loved painting. I had no idea what I would do with it. Back then there was no, you know, internet potential or anything like that.
Mm.
But I just went by feeling and really struggled with the same institutional academic, I guess, energy that you find in any educational institution. And I struggled to a degree. I did have really beautiful lecturers who met me where I was and were so encouraging and really provided a lot of what I felt was missing, which is the affirmation of the unique depth to an individual. And I guess how to actually pull that out, how to affirm it first in a person and then refine it, how to build on that. So instead of doing that, institutions seem to hold a measure and they say, you've got to reach up here. Okay, do it. And there's all these hoops you have to jump through, and it feels exhausting because there's no real reward for this hoop jumping. You've got to put a lot of energy into it, but there's no natural reward because I can't see myself. I can't see my strength. I don't know anything more about who I am or what I'm good at or where I'm going to go. So in lots of ways, it's very confusing. And I found with, it's interesting because when I went back to teaching, I was in such a hole. And I think my lecturer, I can't remember if I asked or if he asked me, but we were still in touch because he's just the loveliest person. And he was genuinely concerned for me and said, would you like to come and help in the still life painting labs? Because I was really good at that. So I'd come in, he'd have 20 students that was, you know, really difficult to get around to everyone. So I'd come in and help them with whatever they were having trouble with. And I loved it so much. And I really learned how to just step into that authoritative role of saying, how are you going with this? How are you feeling about it? Is anything amiss? Would you like help? This is what I think. This is what I'm feeling. Does that make sense? You know, and really, yeah, it took probably a couple of years to develop the authority to do that because I was there and I thought, I need to help these people. I'm going to have to step up. But it wasn't long before they asked me to take class. And then it wasn't long after that that I was taking the whole thing, like for the whole semester, so I could plan out the classes. And I had so much fun doing this because I saw straight away that most people, I couldn't get job satisfaction because they did not have the creative confidence to be able to commit to the task that I had planned for that day that I knew was going to be good for developing skill, you know, and nourishing for them. But they would just have all these inner objections just straight up. No, I don't do charcoal. I'm a photographer. I don't do this, you know. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that got me thinking a lot just about schooling in general and how we are detached from that part of us that adventures and explores and tries new things and gleans whatever is special from those experiences to bring back to our own evolving taste and expression, you know, and that's just so sorely missing. And I know it's a difficult thing. I'm not dissing teachers. I think they do an amazing job. I just think the whole system, the values are not right for humans. Maybe a certain type of human. I know that there are people with more of a left-brained, you know, that linear kind of
analytical,
yeah
the masculine is another word for it.
Left brain approach,
bring that up a bit lately. Yes. Linear, sequential,
that's it.
Logical,
yes.
All the things that I'm not, and probably 95% of artists probably are not, right?
Yeah, we need them. I'm not dissing them either. I'm just saying
you can't. I'm married to one of them and I'm so glad he's built that way, I tell you.
Yes, it's really the other half. But I just think that, you know, those kinds of people are rewarded naturally in a system. So they're energized.
Yeah,
they're energized by that reward. Whereas the creatives who need more of a unique connection, and for someone to see that uniqueness and build them up with that in mind, they are not energized. There's nothing rewarding them. And so they end up just being exhausted and depleted and really confused about how to carry on. So just bringing in more intuitive processes with my uni students, that was key. So teaching them how to wander again, teaching them how to respond according to their own unique taste. It's not about what I think. I want to hear what you think about this. What are you craving for next to this color? Do you enjoy this style of art, or do you prefer this kind of thing? You know, all of those things are perfectly acceptable. We're still going to do the exercises, but I just want you to be aware of how you're feeling about it and whether it's energizing you or not. You know, because I think when you've got that observational analytical thing going, just in the background behind everything, you have a sense of your unique value, really. Like, this is what I feel, this is what I think. And it's not that I'm going to impose that on everyone because that's the way I think it should be. It's just, this is what I have to bring.
And about people just having access to another way of seeing it, you know, outside of the system they might have learnt in. I think that's so beautiful. I'm really curious to know how those two worlds overlapped for you, because you're not still teaching at uni, are you?
No.
They
cut their budget and that was the end.
It's so sad what's been happening within art education across a lot of universities lately here in Australia. It's really quite tragic. So I'm really interested to know how what you learnt there has fed into your current business, because you teach and coach quite extensively and you're an active artist producing regularly. You're doing a lot of things. So what was that transition period like for you, where you flowed more into, well, I'm going to really own my own methodology of teaching and I'm going to build something around that?
Yeah, well, it happened quite organically. I was a stay-at-home mum and I just started having small group workshops for women just in my garage at home. And I drew from the lessons and things that I'd been exploring in my own art to present something. I think we just had an 8-week workshop and they would come every Tuesday night for 8 weeks. But just bringing in everything that I saw that was missing in the bachelor degree painting labs, and just presenting that to these women, we were often in tears. We often had goosebumps going up and down because we were realizing things and there was something very authentic and powerful that was going on. So that was a real clue for me. And those women at the end, they said, how can we keep going? I don't want this to end. I've even had one lovely lady recently just say, that time that we spent in your garage, that was the most inspired time of my whole life.
Wow. Isn't that beautiful? So do you think they were experiencing, I know I experienced this in my own art practice and I suspect you do too, that when you're moving through and working through those creative problems, you actually find that by osmosis, you're actually working on larger problems and resolving larger issues in your life, because it's this holistic. Can we talk about that for a minute?
It's cognitive behavioral therapy. We've got a word for it, which I didn't know that then, but I know it now. And I really lean into that now, because I think the problem is that we've suffered cognitive behavioral damage from having to jump through hoops and having to measure up to all these expectations and things that have nothing to do with our unique value as a person. And I think just year after year of that is a cognitive behavioral damage. So working the opposite, coming back to connecting with that deepest part of ourselves, affirming that part of ourselves, giving it a voice, allowing it to speak, allowing it to practice speaking and strengthen that ability to speak, strengthening just the ability to articulate what's going on down there, in that deepest part of us. I know for myself in my own journey, there was a time where I was just in such a dark place that I was completely disconnected. Like the face that I came out and showed the world was nothing like what, the inner turmoil that was going on inside. And it wasn't safe to show that either. There's no safe place to show that. So doing the work of digging, it's really an excavation, and having a value system that is ready to make sense of what I discovered. That was really important. So that's a big part of my coaching and teaching as well, is introducing values that are more, that make more sense just to a human in this world with all the problems and weights and trauma that we carry. I think a really good example of this is when people show up to paint, the value feels like it's in the product. It's in the ability to produce something that is admirable and saleable, and they can feel proud of it, right? And so because the value is on that, they're all tense. They're worried about it not working out. They're second guessing everything. They're not having a lovely time painting because they're so worried about that thing, whether it's going to work out or not, So that's a value that is not in line with creative truth. So when you bring it back to a value that is more affirming of creative truth, then we know that we need to focus on the process and let go of all expectation, let go of this product pressure and, you know, any requirement for this product to be valuable or admirable or saleable. You've just got to let it all go and just be present in that process and wander and observe and analyze and connect, you know, in the moment, being present with that thing in the moment. And I would liken it to having a completely unloaded conversation. Me and this art, we are just talking back and forth, and I have no idea what it's going to say next to me, but I know that I've got what I need to be able to discern and then respond. And I have so much fun doing that. And the more that I do it and it works and I see beauty and I see new things that I've never seen before, I just get so energized and strong in my ability to navigate that way, you know, to go on adventures. So
absolutely.
Just as a person, I just feel so alive and excited about what I've discovered just in my life and how this all relates to problem solving in life as well. You know, just having a conversation with a person and being able to, you know, show up unloaded with no expectation for anything and just take it step by step and be available and present to respond in a way that is not dramatic and emotional and, you know, based on that expectation, but just to be perceiving like what is actually there and what can I bring to this next, you know, which is really profound. It's so deep.
Hey guys, are you loving what you're hearing on the podcast and craving a bit more from my studio? Then consider checking out my e-course trilogy, Painting as a Practice, playful classes in mixed media painting designed to nurture your authentic style. If you're a beginner painter or seeking some fresh new approaches in your art, then check out Chapter 1, Laying Solid Foundations. Or if you'd like to learn more about my ways with colour and mixed media art supplies, then Chapter 2 is a great option. And if you're seeking to really hone your creative style or learn how to create a series of larger works on canvas, then Chapter 3 is a brilliant option. Each chapter is just $77 each, or you can pick up the discounted bundle of all three courses for just $219. To learn more, be sure to head on over to the link in the show notes or susannethercuttstudio.com/online-classes. I'll see you soon. It is so deep. And the other thing I think that people often miss in that process is the power of the act, being in the creative act, to alchemize whatever emotion you're in. So you can bring wherever you're at to a canvas or a paper or whatever you're working
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
And you can arrive there in not a great place and 2 hours later leave it in a completely different emotional space because you've shifted through whatever emotion need to be expressed. Sometimes it doesn't need words. Sometimes it needs color and tactile relationship with something Absolutely. That's not articulated. So that's been something I've learned from my own journey, and I think that's the miracle that I personally experience over and over again. And I also, something magical happens, I think, when you make my art in that process. It tends to connect with buyers. There's something that happens to you that someone perceives on some level and relates to, and they connect with the work, and it's nothing you can put your finger on, nothing that is in any way
too deep for words. Or, yes.
But it's happened so many times that I can't ignore it, and people will tell me quite out there stuff about how they've connected with artworks that have been made in quite a difficult space for me, and are like a document of that journey through that emotional landscape to a better place. And it's like it becomes their medicine. It's really quite mystical and profound, and I love it.
I love it. And I think this is, it's the energy that we're talking about. And
yes.
What's contained in that artwork is a testament to that resolve for you, that there's hope, that you can come all messed up and figure it out and just go journeying and make it work, you know, come out in a truly transformed state. So yes, I really exactly. believe in whatever energy you're painting with and the intent that you have is, you know, embedded in that, you know, on that canvas, and that it will just keep sending out those vibrations like wherever yes. it is in someone's house. So I often pray over my canvas and just
yep.
think beautiful thoughts and like really nurture it into something that I hope will be uplifting and soothing all at once.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful, Ange. Yes. Yeah, lovely. Hey, this is leading into something I wanted to talk about, which, I mean, you do a lot of different, you create a lot of different online offerings. You've got masterclasses for artists and you also do live classes as well. But you've recently started a membership, and I did a little happy dance when I saw the title of your membership because I was just like, that's perfect, which is Art to Heal a Heart membership. So I'm really curious to know how it's going for you, the membership, and just to learn more about it. And obviously there's beautiful things going on there with a name like that.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. I kind of felt like I put it off for a long time because I thought I needed to have a lot more than what I have. You know, mm-hmm. that thing.
Oh, yeah.
But then when I actually just needed to do it because people kept asking me, and I made the mistake of talking openly about it. I had all the women that have done my courses and they're just waiting for the next thing. They're saying, when is it going to happen? So I just had to just jump in there, and I'm so glad that I did, because this again is a testament to you don't have to measure up. You can come with what you've got, and it's enough. Yep. It's enough. It's actually more than enough. So it's focused on providing studies. So coming away from this intent to create product that we can be proud of, we're just stripping it right back, and we're doing studies. And I also talk a fair bit about, not a fair bit, like there'll be something every lesson usually where I am helping people re-landscape their art brain so that it's
I
more...
like that. That's I just had a visual of someone gardening their own brain there.
It
I like
is.
It.
It's like re-landscaping the soul and yep. figuring out how to set things up so that it's beneficial to creative process and empowering to you as a person, as an artist, as a being, and just yeah, stripping back all this extra stuff that weighs us down and trips us over and makes us second guess everything. So just everything that I've been talking about, that's what it is. It's just mm-hmm. providing something little, like it's usually half an hour to an hour every week. Mm-hmm. And focusing on developing skills. Like this week I've made a little class in brushwork. So mm-hmm. looking at fine technical brush strokes compared to the more incidental kind of mark making and how we wrangle the two. I just skip around and I intuit from my audience what they need too. There's a lot of feedback coming through that, oh, the feedback has just been amazing. I just feel so encouraged with it because, we're 9 weeks in and I've got reports of people saying that their whole life has shifted and they don't think wow. it's a coincidence that it's the time that they've been, you know, watching the classes. And that is what I live for. That is what I live for. That just lights me up because I know what a difference it's made to my life, and it's such a simple thing. Not much is required. It's just that gentle shift into soothing application.
Mm-hmm.
Just having experiences that are feeding you, that are actually, you know, bringing fuel so that you're not just jumping through hoops, like figuring out all your responsibilities and how you're going to get it all done and not having anything coming back to nourish your soul. So yeah. That's what that's about. But I did, because the reason why I delayed it too was that I actually wanted to put out my Art to Heal a Heart course first,
right,
and then have the membership following on from that. But it's taken a little bit longer because it's more intensive. It's a bit of a deep dive into, healing this inner landscape through journaling and art studies and experiences. So creating experiences for yourself that are powerful for this digging, and having the values right so that when you do discover something, you don't just freak out and stop digging. You actually know how to look at it and how to love on yourself through that, and how to process, make gold out of those ugly, painful things, so that it's not just suffering just like a wounded victim. It's actually knowing what to do with this trauma in order to bring it to resolve, you know. And I can bring it to resolve by processing it all the way through, so that I've got a witness and a testimony to enable somebody else in processing their trauma and their pain. So that's how I've made gold of mine. And I know that there are lots of ways that you can do this, but that's essentially my heart for this program, is through art and through painting and journaling and just introspective, it's the digging, it's enabling transformation.
Beautiful. Yeah,
totally getting rid of creative block. You just don't have it anymore. Never, never again.
Yeah. So, oh, that's wonderful. So how are you finding the experience of creating content every week? Because it's a membership, something I've thought about too, but then I'm just like, that's an intent. And I really like to have spaciousness in my life. So I'm scared of that. How are you managing that aspect? I'm really curious.
I just manage it. I have a dream of setting myself up so that I get all my content done in a week, and then I don't have to think about it until next month, but I haven't set that up yet. But it's kind of important that I don't do that yet, because I am listening to the feedback and watching what's happening for my audience. And I want more than anything to provide an experience that is giving a really great effect. So I want people to be informed and inspired, motivated, fueled. You know, so if I'm not getting feedback to say that what I've been putting out is giving me that effect, then I'll tweak things and change things. And that's what I did with my uni students as well. Like, I would watch and see what's happening, and I'd have to go back and rewrite things and tweak things and add, you know, different exercises in to try and get this thing rolling, you know. So similar to, just if I'm working on a painting, I want a desired effect. So I'll keep tweaking things until I get there. So I think just in the early stages, that's been good, just to do it every week. And I have managed. It's the editing that kills me.
Yeah.
The actual doing it is great. If I had someone, and I will need to employ somebody soon, just to do the editing and like all the back end tech stuff that takes so much time.
Yeah, but I've
absolutely enjoyed it so much, and I think it's developing me just as a person as well, because of this action of wanting an effect and observing and analyzing and responding towards that effect. And I think that's really where the life is.
Well, it's lovely hearing you describe that process, because that's a process that has a lot of integrity. And I love that you're staying so close to it and listening to your audience, because, I mean, that's who it's for, you know. Mm. So it keeps the integrity within the process. So that's really beautiful. And it sounds like a gorgeous space to be in.
Yeah, oh, I just love it. Yeah, really glad beautiful. That I started.
Yeah, hey, Ange, you're also a creativity coach. I mean, there's so much that you've been doing over the last few years. It's and I can see that you've just really been following the threads of what you feel really called to do and how you feel called to serve, because you're obviously so centered on your students and making sure that they are getting what they need from you. I'd love to hear more about what you find the most effective ways to be to help support women in their unique creative identity.
I think having practiced, well, first of all, figured out these values that support creativity that go against regular values of institutional, you know, institutions, the education system, and just society in general, I think, just has values that are just a bit off. So figuring out the values and then listening, and I love it so much when I get a new client and I get to listen to their set of problems and their frustration, and immediately my cogs just start turning and I'm like, what's this? What's this made of? You know, and so I'm just problem solving in the background and then figuring out tailored exercises, or, you know, whether that's in art or it might be journaling, it might just be, I want you to do color studies and I want you to think about it this way, you know, and there'll be a very particular observation that I want them to make in an experience and then come back and share it with me. And then I know whether something is developing or not. I'm not sure how to describe it. I think that, yeah, the basis of it is understanding values which support creativity.
Yeah.
Because when you've got that intact, you've got eyes to be able to discern and the knowledge to problem solve. And it's in the pipeline too. It probably won't happen till next year, but I do really want to develop a course for educators and parents on how to instill creativity in students and children, and not quash it, because it's easily, you know, that's a very sacred flame and it's easily just snuffed out, you know, it's not hard to do. And especially when it's just day after day of the same messaging, my heart breaks, you know.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, because kids they're born with that flame lit, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Like kids are just, they are awake to their creativity. They're uninhibited and it's kind of a gradual process of almost shutting down. And I've been observing this process a bit in my eldest daughter, who's turning 10 next week, and how her, that it's, I think Betty Edwards talks about this, you know, her book, Drawing on the
Right Side of the brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome book.
So she talks about that process that kids go through, I think it's between like 8 and 11 or something, where they gradually shut down to their innate creativity and start to judge their work in terms of how realistic is it, is that rendering of what I've made. And she's going through that process at the moment, and she's a really great little drawer, and she's actually very good because she's practiced a lot. And that's something that Betty Edwards talks about, is it's unlike other, you know, cognitive abilities that increase naturally as you get older, that does not occur with realistic rendering of objects. And I'm really trying to battle with that with her at the moment, because she comes and makes comment on my art about, Mum, sometimes you just make blobs, but, you know, they're not really looking like flowers. Like, she's saying it very innocently, but I can hear the world judgment reflecting back through her. So it's like, I'm so glad she says it to me, because it gives me the opportunity to actually meet her in that moment and go, yes, well, actually, there's still a lot of value in working this way. And have a conversation around that, because, and I'm so glad I understood that process of how people shut down around, how children shut down around that age, so that I could have the conversation as she's going through that, it's a very natural process. It's kind of the journeying away and coming back. It's like yet another metaphor of art and life, isn't it? You journey away to then rediscover the truth and come back to what you actually understood as a child, right?
Yeah, such a great point. I do wonder, though, whether if we had different values in our society and education system, whether that would be such a strong thing that goes on with everybody. Whether that judgment and that unacceptance would be so, you know what I mean? It's so intense.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember it.
It is. Yes.
And it's disabling.
I think for her, it's interesting because, and I've spoken about this before, she has ADHD and dyslexia. And actually having the diagnoses for those conditions has been very positive for her, because she does not actually, we've from the very moment of understanding what was going on, she was so relieved to understand that she was different and there was a reason why. It wasn't a mystery anymore. And so because she's always had this understanding about her own neurodiversity, and we're very careful with how we speak about having those two, conditions for want of a better word, but it's just a neurodiversity. And also understanding from myself, even though I'm not diagnosed, that they probably mostly come from me. And so we're able to redefine as we go along. So I think it is shifting and changing. And I think for those kids that are going, you know, that are going through that process of diagnosis and understanding what's going on for them when they know they're a bit different, they're more awake to those lies in the world at an earlier age than I think. I have a wound around my own education wound is around the fact that I was always overcompensating, because I did well at school, but I had to work so hard because I have deficiencies in those areas. So it's sort of been this overcompensating thing. And so I kind of, it would have been nice to almost have been in her position where from a very young age I understood I was different, and that was okay. And my parents accepted that, and my school accepted that, and supported me in the process of finding a way to move forward and have a rich, beautiful life that understood and respected my skills and my strengths. So I think there are shifts happening, but it's very early stages, and I probably wouldn't have even have been aware of that had I not been going through this process with her. So that was a bit of a rabbit warren I went down there.
glad you said it, because
it's an interesting topic, and it's one that we've interacted over actually think in conversations in threads on Insta. I'm really interested in your perspective on that.
Yes, I'm so glad you brought it up, because I think that perhaps that relief is in the acknowledgement of the difference.
Yes, it is.
I do have a problem with it being labeled a disorder.
Because yes, I can understand that.
Yeah, I actually, like, I've been diagnosed ADD, but I just wonder whether it's a misappropriation of the information that I needed for my right brain strength and way of processing. You know, you could imagine, think of the Samsung processor and the Apple processor. You know, the way that those operating systems work, they're just different. And if you're used to an Apple phone and you go to the Samsung, you just feel like all out of whack and I don't know how to do anything. And I think the right brain and left brain is really similar. And we've got a lot of misunderstanding because of our left brain systems. We've got a huge misunderstanding of right brain operations. And I think that if children who were right brain dominant were recognized from a young age, and I think it's easy to do, they're the daydreamers. They're the ones who are doing things differently and wandering off and find it hard to sit still, because they're made for adventure. That's where they get rewarded. You know, they don't feel that natural reward for sitting down, figuring out, you know, all those left brain sequential systems. So I do wonder, I could be totally wrong, but I do wonder if these children were educated in a way that was beneficial for that mode of operating.
Well, she is educated that way now, because we understood what the problem was, and now we have the right teaching in place for her so she can learn the way she needs to learn. So really it's what you do. If you put a label on something, it's what you do with it, right? Whether you turn it into a judgment and an opportunity to, you know, berate yourself for not being a certain way. But the way we've approached it is that it's an opportunity for radical self-acceptance of who you are, how you're built, and finding the right way to learn, which is precisely what we've done for her. Yeah. And awesome. You know, we have tremendous opportunity in Australia to be able to do that. There are amazing supports in place for neurodiversity now via NDIS, which, for people that don't know overseas, is the National Disability Insurance Scheme. So, you know, there are... Yeah, it's what you do with it. It's like with anything, isn't it, really? Like, it's what you do with that information. And I was really reluctant to get the diagnoses, because I was very much Everything that you've expressed there was something that I feared myself, but it's been such a different experience, and it's taught me about how important it is to, in the way that we talk about it on an everyday basis and relate to it and check in with her. And, you know, because kids do, as they get older, compare themselves with others. So she notices that the differences between what she can do in a classroom and what other kids can't
Absolutely. Do. Absolutely. And it's a stark the conversation difference when you've got all those kids in the class all the same age. I have a problem with that too.
Yeah.
It's
It's such an interesting topic, isn't it? It really is. Yeah. Thanks for sharing your perspectives on that. No I think worries. It's such a great conversation for us to have around it. I mean, you're a mum too, and I wanted to talk to you about that because you've got four daughters, is that right?
Yes.
You are busy. How the heck are you doing it all?
Don't know. If you saw the state of my house, you might understand. But I go through seasons. So just seasons of figuring out, you know, systems for housekeeping. And I do, you know, I do struggle, but what I'm working on just energizes me so much. I can't do it any other way. This is just how it has to be.
Yes.
And I found it really crucial, actually, as a mother, to watch my children, to watch them going to school and the way that they interact with other children, and, you know, the suffering and frustrations that they have, and being able to talk through the things that I've learned with them in a way that's age appropriate, and just hearing their feedback, like that's actually informing my messaging as well. So I feel like when you figure out what you're here for, everything relates, everything feeds it. And I know that I'm providing a richness for them too, just in their day-to-day experience with what I've been processing, you know, in my career and in my art and all those things. Like, it helps me to show up as the best version of myself that I can. So although, yeah, there's lots of things that I can't do for them that I wish that I could, I think that in the end it will all balance out. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
But I probably need to employ a washing lady, and I'm ready for staff.
Yeah. It just becomes a bit overwhelming, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like, I saw a quote that said, cleaning the house while the kids are still growing is like shoveling snow while it's still snowing.
It's true.
It's that real, it's almost like a torture thing where you've just finished and then it's all there again and over and over again. So I'm so grateful that I've got my creative practice so that I've got something happening that's not going to get undone.
Yes.
I think that's really underrated. We need more of that.
Yes, absolutely. So have you got anything exciting coming up in the near future, Ange, that you'd like to share with us?
Oh, look, I did touch on it before. My Art to Heal a Heart course.
Yes.
I don't have a date for it yet, but it's a 6-week program that I'm really excited about, which really encapsulates all my most powerful coaching processes and exercises into a course kind of situation. So, I'm just really excited about seeing what happens with that. And it's all about transformation. It's about re-landscaping the soul so that it's beneficial for growth and creativity and just that that deep connection that we need to have with that deepest part of ourselves, whether it's your soul or whatever it is, that so often we get pulled away from just with, you know, the rat race and all this measuring up. Yeah. Yeah,
beautiful. I love that you've used heart in the title. I've actually been a member of, do you know Danielle Laporte?
No.
Have you heard of her? Oh my God, you probably should Google her. Okay. Anyway, she has a membership which I'm a part of, which is called Heart Centered. And so it's all about working with the heart chakra and the transformational power of the heart. So just bringing everything to the heart, because it finds natural and most loving resolution there. So that really resonated for me when I saw what your membership was called. I'm like, that's perfect, because I feel like when we can bring love to our creative process and whatever problems that we're bringing to the canvas or the clay or whatever we're working with, that it finds resolution. And it just so resonated for me. So
makes good of everything, no matter how ugly. Absolutely. Yeah, totally. I love that.
Well, so beautiful to chat with you today, Ange. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
It's such a pleasure, really, Suze. Thank you.
Really beautiful to dig deep with you into a few different topics. And, yeah, I really look forward to seeing what's appearing for you next. It's always exciting to see what Ange Miller's coming up
with. Oh, thanks so much for having me, Suze.
Yeah, all right, lovely. Thanks, everyone. We'll catch you later. Bye.
Bye.
You can always see more of my art over at susannethercutt.com, and if you're interested in learning from me or checking out the podcast notes, you can find those over on susannethercuttstudio.com. I love hearing your comments and feedback, so feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, then why not snap a screenshot and share it in your Instagram stories. Be sure to tag me at susan.nethercutt so I can say hi. And if you've got a great idea for a future podcast episode or know someone who you think I should interview, then pop on over to susannethercuttstudio.com/podcast, hit the button in the header image to shoot me an email. Catch you next time.